Imagine you have just built like the ultimate fortress. We are talking 100-foot walls, maybe a moat filled with alligators,
Right.
motion sensors on every single gate. You feel entirely secure.
Right, the totally impenetrable perimeter.
Exactly. But then you wake up one morning and the crown jewels are just gone. The front door wasn't battered down, the walls weren't scaled. Instead, one thief found a hidden maintenance hatch that the architect just forgot about.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and another just called the guard shack and politely convinced them to hand over the keys. And then a third, well, they hired a contractor who already possessed the blueprints to the entire place.
It completely shatters that comforting illusion we have of, impenetrable perimeter defense. You realize very quickly that the height of your walls doesn't matter at all if the paths of least resistance are just left wide open.
Yeah, exactly. And that is the core of our briefing today. Welcome to today's deep dive. We're looking at the three most critical cybersecurity stories that have broken over the last few days, pulling from fresh intelligence reports as by Creatrol, Alt Intel, CrowdStrike, Mandiant, Trend Micro, and Citizen Lab.
And today is May 4th, 2026, just to set the timeline.
Right, good call. Our mission today is to decode the modern hacker's playbook. We're going to explore exactly how attackers are bypassing defenses right now, from exploiting raw server vulnerabilities to manipulating the very people managing our cloud environments to the commercialization of state espionage.
The tactics we're looking at across these three stories range from highly technical zero-day exploits to incredibly simple phone calls, but they all point to one underlying unavoidable theme, really. Attackers are aggressively finding those paths of least resistance to maximize their impact. They aren't just working harder, I mean, they're working much, much smarter.
Okay, let's unpack this. We have to start at the foundation of the internet itself, the servers that actually host our data. Because when a single flaw is discovered at that foundational level, it triggers an absolute global race.
It's the digital equivalent of a gold rush, and the vulnerability detected by Trill Alt Intel just a couple of days ago, on May 2nd, is a perfect example of this phenomenon.
All right, this is the newly disclosed cPanel and Web Host Manager vulnerability. And for anyone who doesn't spend their days managing server infrastructure, cPanel is essentially the back-end dashboard for a massive chunk of the internet.
That's everywhere.
If you run a website, chances are your hosting provider uses cPanel to let you manage your emails, your databases, your security certificates. If an attacker controls cPanel, they control everything. And this vulnerability, it allows a remote attacker to completely bypass authentication and gain elevated control.
It's a critical flaw. And the scope of the initial attacks exploiting it was highly targeted. The activity was traced back to a specific IP address, 95.111.250.175. This particular threat actor was using publicly available proof-of-concept exploits to go after very specific targets. We're talking government and military domains in the Philippines and Laos, as well as managed service providers, or MSPs, in the US, Canada, and South Africa.
Targeting an MSP is like a classic force multiplier. You don't just breach one small business, you breach the IT company that holds the keys for hundreds of different businesses.
Exactly. The blast radius is huge.
But here's the part of the report that completely blew my mind. Before this threat actor even launched the cPanel attacks, they went after an Indonesian defense sector training portal, and they used a custom exploit chain that is just wild.
Oh, the CPTCHA bypass.
Yes, they already had valid credentials, but they hit a Keppi T-CHA scream. You know those grids where you have to like select all the images with traffic lights or crosswalk?
Right, the standard human verification challenge to stop automated bots.
Right. But instead of trying to solve the challenge normally, or even plugging in some advanced AI image recognition tool to crack it, the script they wrote just bypassed it entirely. It turns out the server was issuing a session cookie to the user's browser to keep them logged in, and embedded right inside that cookie was the expected answer to the SCCAPT-TCHA.
That is just incredible.
The attackers just read the cookie, extracted the answer, and fed it back to the server. It is exactly like stealing the teacher's answer key because it was accidentally printed on the back of the test itself.
It's a brilliant example of exploiting a logic flaw. I mean, the developers built a security mechanism to keep bots out, but fundamentally undermined it by storing the answer on the client side, where the user or the attacker can just see it.
Yeah.
And once they bypassed that key TTCJ, they didn't stop there. They used an authenticated SQL injection to achieve remote code execution through a simple document save endpoint.
Hold on, let's break that down for a second. We throw SQL injection around a lot, but what exactly does that look like in practice here?
Sure. Imagine a normal text box on that defense portal, like a prompt asking you to type in a name to save a document. Instead of typing a normal file name, the attacker types a string of database commands.
Okay.
If the server isn't properly set up to sanitize or clean that input, it takes those commands and blindly runs them on the back-end database.
So they're tricking the server into running their malicious code just by filling out a form weirdly?
Exactly. And that leads to remote code execution, or RCE, which is the holy grail for a hacker. It means they can run any command they want on your server from halfway across the world. They completely take the wheel.
Wow. And from there, they didn't just smash and grab. The report says they built a fully persistent backdoor using legitimate tools like OpenVPN and Ligolo, along with something called the Adaptic C2 framework. What exactly are they doing with all of that?
They are digging in. OpenVPN is standard networking software, and Ligolo is a tunneling tool. Think of it like digging a secret encrypted subterranean tunnel that bypasses all the motion sensors at the network's front gate.
Right.
And Adaptic C2 is a command and control framework. It's essentially the remote control they use to operate the compromised server and pivot deeper into the internal network.
So they're using legitimate admin tools to stay hidden.
Right. It's a tactic called living off the land.
Yeah.
And in this case, they use that access to exfiltrate a massive corpus of Chinese railway sector documents. But what's fascinating here is the speed of weaponization once the underlying cPanel vulnerability became public knowledge. We aren't just talking about a slow, stealthy espionage campaign anymore.
Yeah, the feeding frenzy is staggering. Sensi's reported that within 24 hours of the cPanel vulnerability being publicly disclosed, multiple third parties were actively exploiting it. It wasn't just state-aligned actors looking for railway documents. Cyber criminals immediately jumped in.
They did it.
They started deploying Mirai botnet variants and a ransomware strain literally called Sorry.
And just to clarify, a Mirai botnet variant essentially infects these servers and turns them into zombie computers. The attacker strings tens of thousands of these compromised servers together into a massive network, which they then use to launch massive distributed denial of service or DDoS attacks to knock other websites offline.
The scale of the land grab is insane. The Shadow Server Foundation put out data showing that on April 30th, at least 44,000 compromised IP addresses were actively scanning and brute-forcing their honeypots.
That's a massive number.
It is. And for context, a honeypot is basically a decoy server left intentionally vulnerable by security researchers to catch attackers in the act. But then, by May 3rd, that massive wave of 44,000 scanners plummeted to just 3,540.
That dramatic drop tells a very specific story. It indicates the initial gold rush is over. The automated scripts rapidly scan the entire internet, compromise the low-hanging fruit, you know, the unpatched servers, and then once those easy targets were taken or vigilant administrators finally applied the patches, the scanning died down.
So the easy targets were gone.
Exactly. But those 44,000 initial compromises, they are still out there, quietly infected. It perfectly illustrates how quickly a patched vulnerability turns into a global free-for-all, impacting everything from a local hosting provider running a bakery website to national defense infrastructure.
It really is a race against the clock. But looking at these attackers writing custom SQL injections and reverse engineering session cookies makes me wonder, why spend days or weeks writing complex code to hack a server when you can just ask the IT department to open the front door for you?
Precisely. And that transitions us from the technical front line to the human frontline.
Right. Let's move to our second story. We're looking at a major report from CrowdStrike and Mandiant. They are tracking two cybercrime groups known as Cordial Spider and Snarky Spider.
Great names.
Yeah, always. They've been active since at least October 2025, and Snarky Spider is actually a native English-speaking crew tied to the massive e-crime ecosystem known as the Calm, and their playbook is entirely focused on rapid, high-impact SaaS extortion.
SaaS, meaning software as a service. Things like Google Workspace, Salesforce, Microsoft SharePoint. These groups operate almost entirely within those cloud environments, which makes them incredibly difficult to track using traditional network security tools that are looking for malware on a physical hard drive.
And their entry method isn't a zero-day exploit. It's almost entirely based on social engineering. They use vishing, voice phishing. They literally pick up the phone, call a company's IT help desk, impersonate an employee, and direct the help desk worker to an SSO-themed ATM page.
Right. ATM stands for adversary in the middle. It's a crucial evolution from standard phishing. In the old days, a phishing site was just a fake login screen that stole your password.
Yeah.
But today, almost everyone have multi-factor authentication, or MFA.
Right, so I'm struggling with the logistics of this. If I have an authenticator app on my phone, and that six-digit code changes every 30 seconds, how exactly does a fake website steal that before it expires?
Because the attack happens in real time. An adversary in the middle attack sits exactly in the middle of you and the real login page. When you type your password into the fake site, the attacker's server instantly types it into the real site. When the real site says, "Hey, send me the MFA code," the attacker's fake site displays that exact same prompt to you. You check your phone, you type in the six-digit code, and the attacker instantly passes it to the real site. They don't just steal your password, they capture the active session token the real server issues.
Wow. Okay, so they're just an invisible middleman relaying the entire conversation.
Exactly.
But here is the question that always gets me with these groups. If they're making direct phone calls to an IT desk and altering access to cloud apps, how do they stay hidden long enough to actually extort the company? Shouldn't alarms be going off everywhere?
They should. But it comes down to applying that living off the land strategy to administrative settings. First, they use residential proxies. This routes their internet traffic through everyday home internet connections. So instead of logging in from an IP address known to be a server farm in Eastern Europe, their login looks like it's coming from a residential neighborhood in Ohio.
Oh, I see.
It doesn't trigger security alerts for suspicious geographic locations. It just looks like a normal remote worker logging in from the suburbs.
Right, blending into the noise.
Exactly. Mm. Then, once they bypass the initial MFA using that adversary in the middle technique, they immediately delete the victim's existing MFA devices and register their own. But here is the truly insidious part. They know the system will automatically send an email to the victim saying, "Security alert, a new device has been registered to your account."
Oh man, let me guess, they intercept the email.
Better. They set up an inbox rule. Before the system even generates the alert, the attacker configures the victim's inbox to automatically delete any incoming emails containing keywords like security alert, new device, or MFA.
Wow.
The victim never even sees the warning. The email goes straight to the trash, permanently deleted.
That is terrifyingly efficient. They break in, change the locks, and then cut the wire to the alarm bell before it can even ring.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the real danger here is what they are actually targeting with these phishing pages. In most cases, they aren't just logging into one specific app, like an HR portal. Mm. They are compromising the organization's identity provider, or IDP.
Let's unpack identity provider, because that sounds abstract, but it's something almost everyone in a corporate environment uses every day. That's single sign-on, right? Like when you log into your work laptop in the morning, and suddenly you have automatic access to Slack, your email, your project management software.
Yes. That single point of authentication is the identity provider. By abusing the trust relationship that all those different apps have with the IDP, the attackers don't have to hack Google Workspace, SharePoint, or Salesforce individually.
It's literally like stealing the master key for a massive hotel. You don't need to spend time picking the lock on 500 individual doors. You just stroll right into the penthouse, the security office, the vault, all with one key. Once they have that IDP access, they move laterally across the entire SOS ecosystem. They scrape internal directories, find high-value files, and exfiltrate the data for extortion.
And this underscores a very difficult truth about modern enterprise security. We rely heavily on single sign-on for convenience, but human verification at the help desk level is currently the absolute weakest link in the chain. All the cryptography, all the firewalls, all the zero-day defenses in the world cannot protect a network if a human administrator is simply convinced over the phone to reset an MFA token.
It is a sobering thought. We've seen how attackers exploit technical flaws in servers with cPanel, and we've seen how they exploit human trust for financial extortion with the spiders. But our final story today takes these exact same tactics and applies them to a completely different arena: geopolitical intelligence and transnational repression.
This brings us to the findings from Trend Micro, Citizen Lab, and Proofpoint. And we're looking specifically at campaigns they've tracked involving China-aligned espionage activities.
And just to be clear for the listener, we are impartially reporting the contents of these reports. We aren't taking political sides here, just looking at the technical data and threat intelligence provided by these sources.
Absolutely.
So the reports outline two distinct but overlapping campaigns. Let's look at the infrastructure side first. Trend Micro has been tracking a cluster they call Shadow Earth 053, active since December 2024. They are targeting government and defense sectors across South and East Asia, but interestingly, they also hit Poland, which is a NATO state.
The tactical approach here relies heavily on end-day vulnerabilities, specifically targeting internet-facing Microsoft Exchange and ICE servers.
So end days, meaning not 0 days. The vulnerabilities are known. Microsoft has released patches for them, but the targets just haven't gotten around to applying the updates yet.
Correct. It is, again, the path of least resistance. Why burn a multi-million-dollar zero-day exploit when a known vulnerability like the proxy logon chain still works perfectly well on thousands of servers? Once they exploit that unpatched server, they drop a web shell called Godzilla to establish persistent access.
And then they use a technique called DLL sideloading to deploy malware called ShadowPad via AnyDesk. Can you explain DLL sideloading for us? Because it sounds incredibly stealthy, but the mechanics of it are a bit over my head.
It is stealthy. A DLL, or Dynamic Link Library, is basically a file containing a bunch of code that other programs can call upon to use. Operating systems like Windows inherently trust digitally signed, legitimate software executables like the software for AnyDesk, which is a very common, safe remote desktop tool.
Right.
What the attackers do is place a malicious DLL file in the exact same folder as the legitimate AnyDesk executable.
Okay, so they're sitting right next to each other in the file system.
It's exactly. When the legitimate program runs, it looks for its necessary DLL files to function. The attacker tricks the program into loading the malicious code instead of its own safe code. The operating system looks at it and says, oh, AnyDesk is running, it's digitally signed, it's safe, completely missing the fact that AnyDesk is currently executing a malicious payload. It essentially uses a trusted application as a Trojan horse to bypass endpoint antivirus systems.
So they are hiding in plain sight on the servers, but that is only half the story. Citizen Lab released a corresponding report focusing on the human side of this espionage. They identified two clusters, GGlitterCARP and SequinCARP, active in early 2025. And their targets weren't just servers. They were journalists, civil society members, Uyghur, Tibetan, Taiwanese, and Hong Kong diaspora activists, as well as the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists.
The targeting here is highly specific and deeply researched. They aren't casting a wide net hoping someone clicks a link. They are using sophisticated digital impersonation schemes, spoofing known individuals, or sending fake tech company security alerts.
And their phishing emails are next level. They embed these one-by-one tracking pixels inside the emails. Wait, so we are clear. A one-by-one pixel. We're talking about like a single invisible dot on a screen.
Literally a single transparent pixel. To you, the email looks completely normal. But when you open an email, your email client usually has to download the images from a remote server to display them. When your client reaches out to the attacker's server to download that one tiny invisible pixel, it gives the attacker a wealth of information.
Because it's phoning home.
Exactly. It confirms to the attacker that the email was actually opened. It logs the exact time you read it. It harvests your device's IP address, which gives them your rough physical location. It gathers information about the operating system and browser you are using. It is reconnaissance on a micro level, mapping out your exact digital footprint before they even attempt to send you a malicious payload.
That is wild. It's intelligence gathering before the attack even begins.
And this raises an important question about the convergence of tactics across these different threat actors. When we look at the data provided by Proofpoint, who tracks these same espionage groups under the names UNK Sparky Carp and UNK Dualtone, they observed them targeting the US, Europe, and Taiwan. They were spoofing perceived opposition groups.
Right.
They even used highly specific, culturally relevant lures, like targeting U.S. journalists with malicious documents supposedly related to protests at the U.S. Army 250th anniversary parade.
The level of detail in the social engineering is incredible. It requires a deep understanding of the local culture and news cycle. But here's where it gets really interesting. What jumped out at me from the Citizen Lab report is their medium confidence assessment of who is actually behind the keyboards. They suggest that these espionage attacks are likely being carried out by commercial entities hired by the state.
Are we looking at a paradigm shift here? Are state actors basically just hiring mercenaries off the dark web? That is the crucial overlap. And frankly, it's the most chilling part of these reports. The infrastructure they use, the adversary in the middle phishing kits, the use of legitimate tunneling tools like Jugofittable Tunnel or Westtunnel, these are no longer the exclusive domain of highly advanced military cyber units.
Wow.
They're commercialized commodities. State actors are outsourcing the hacking to private contractors who use the exact same SOS abuse and phishing kits we saw the cybercrime spiders using for extortion in our previous story. The tools of financially motivated cybercrime and the tools of state-sponsored intelligence gathering are converging into a single shared marketplace.
So, what does this all mean? If we synthesize everything we've unpacked in this briefing, whether it's a critical zero-day vulnerability in cPanel being exploited by thousands of bots in a matter of hours, a phishing call to a tired IT help desk worker that compromises a company's entire cloud identity, or a highly targeted invisible tracking pixel sent to an investigative journalist, the modern threat landscape is moving incredibly fast, and it completely blurs the line between deep technical exploits and human psychological manipulation.
It demands a fundamental shift in how we view security. The idea of a traditional perimeter, that fortress with the high walls we talked about, is dead.
Exactly. Navigating this landscape today means understanding that behind every breached server or stolen identity provider token is a desperate need for zero trust architecture. You have to assume the network is already hostile. You can't just trust a login because the password was right. You have to verify every user, every device, every single time they try to access a new resource. And above all, it requires intense critical thinking.
I will leave you with a final thought to mull over. Throughout these reports, we've seen cybercriminals utilizing complex tunneling tactics that look exactly like state espionage, and we've seen state-sponsored actors utilizing commercial phishing kits that look exactly like everyday e-crime. As these commercial hacking contractors become the global norm, we have to ask ourselves, in the near future, will it even be possible to tell the difference between a financially motivated extortionist and a nation-state intelligence operation just by looking at their code?
Or will we just be staring at that empty fortress, wondering which invisible door they used to walk right past the alligators? It's a daunting question, but understanding this playbook is the first step in rewriting the rules. Thank you for joining us on today's deep dive. Keep questioning those assumptions, stay curious, and we'll catch you next time.